Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 171 of My 123 Cents, the podcast. My guest this week is Tony Flood. He is the former two-time holder of the Stride Pro Wrestling Legacy Championship, and he is now the number one contender for the Stride Pro Wrestling Heavyweight title. And in fact, he faces Jay Spade this Saturday night. And there's a very interesting backstory between Tony Flood and Jay Spade, and we get all into that in the interview today. This show is a benefit fundraiser for Christopher Grade School in Christopher, Illinois. So we're not in our usual spot in Marion, even though we've kind of bounced around here very recently. But we're going to be hitting Christopher for the very first time. So please head on out. It's a fundraiser. It's a benefit. It'll go to the school there. And it's a great way to support not only independent wrestling, but also support a good cause, a good school in our region. Also happening Saturday night is the finals for the Stride Cup as well as the Legacy Championship. You may remember last month, or earlier this month technically, Chris Hargis had to relinquish the Legacy Championship. He has injured his back, and Sam Hunter, our general manager, has decided that the winner of the Stride Cup tournament will also become the new Legacy Champion. So it's Jose Magnifico taking on newcomer Anonymous, who has really had an impressive showing in the tournament so far. Both men actually have done very well for themselves. So the finals will happen Saturday night again, bell time, 7 o'clock for that show. Big Bull Bronson, my hero for the time being, taking on Roger Mathis. This is a grudge match that has been festering there. The frustration really grew at the show earlier this month at John A. Logan College. So it'll be good to see those two go head-to-head. Also happening, Axe Allwart and Heath Hatton, a team I never thought I would see pair up. They will be teaming up, and not only teaming up, but taking on the Stride Pro Wrestling Tag Team Champions, the DR Party. Of course, Freebird rules there. Don't know which two members of that foursome will be teaming up, but you know that Jay Wellington Beauregard, I'm sure, has something up his sleeve as this match goes down. There's also going to be a fatal four-way for the number one contendership to the Legacy Championship. So whoever wins the title on Saturday night, Anonymous or Jose Magnifico, they will face one of four men: Jerry Travelstead, T-Dog, former Legacy Champion, the very first Legacy Champion, J.D. Wilk, and Ace Hawkins. And there's going to be a mystery entrant in there too. I can't wait to see who that ends up being. And then A.T. Brooks takes on Bo Sawyer. Of course, that is stemming from the big tag team match that Aaron Brooks and Joey O'Reilly had against Bo Sawyer and Frank Wyatt. So Bo Sawyer and Frank Wyatt injured took Joey O'Reilly out of action. So he is not going to be at the show, or at least he's not scheduled to wrestle at the show on Saturday night. So that is kind of the card. We'll talk more to Tony Flood in just a few minutes. I want to also talk about a couple of other quick things going on in the world of professional wrestling. Of course, I'm recording this on Sunday morning. Elimination Chamber happened Sunday night. And of course, the speculation, the rumor, and you know, the internet says that Roman Reigns is going to win, that was the plan all along, was for him to go on to WrestleMania and face Brock Lesnar. Chad, though, posed a very interesting question to me via text, and we didn't really get much into detail on it, but he basically asked, because I know you guys have been following it as well, I guess Roman Reigns has been tied to some sort of company or something with a steroid ring, basically. That's the gist of it. And so far, the accusations have been unfounded, but I read something, and again, take it all with a grain of salt, that someone involved with this says they have video and photographic proof that Roman is involved in it. And Chad asked me if I thought that would impact him going forward with WrestleMania. And I think it very well could. You know, again, we live in a society where we build people up and then we like to tear them down. So whether we like this person or don't like this person or whatnot, you know, very similar thing happening with Rich Swann, for example. You know, he was accused of something and he was immediately suspended because WWE has a zero tolerance policy on certain things. Domestic violence was one of them. WWE suspended him. It turns out that the charges were dropped against him and he was released. Enzo Amore was accused of raping a woman back in October. He didn't disclose that he was being investigated. And that, I think, is what led to his demise. It wasn't the fact that he was accused per se, but it was the fact that he didn't come forward. And I do think WWE probably, even if the accusation was there, would have taken some sort of action. I don't know that they would have necessarily fired him right away. So it comes down to this now with Roman Reigns. He is being accused of this. And I don't know what happens behind closed doors with WWE. I'm not judging them for not doing anything publicly yet because we don't know. But a lot of times we didn't know for sure what the situation was with Rich Swann. We didn't know for sure what the situation was with Enzo, but I know they are different cases and different examples here. And in Enzo's case, I do think he deserved to be released because he did not disclose the fact that the investigation was going on. And I haven't talked about any of this here because I just haven't taken any of that issue up, but I get where WWE, a publicly traded company, needs to protect itself too and its assets and whatnot. And tying anything, especially in this today's climate, but anytime, there's no good time for a sexual assault allegation. But especially now where people are more, it's more in the media and people are talking about it and people are sharing their stories. So obviously WWE had to take the appropriate actions. The steroid thing, I don't know. I do think that I don't think going into, 6 months ago, yeah, I would have said Roman Reigns is going to be the guy to go to WrestleMania. You know, we're hours away from Elimination Chamber. You're listening to this after Elimination Chamber, and this all may be a moot point. I don't think it's 100% locked that Reigns is going to WrestleMania to face Brock Lesnar. Personally, I wouldn't mind it being Braun Strowman or Finn Balor. I don't think that's going to happen, and I do think whoever it is, though, I would love to see that person win the championship and go on and defend it and mix things up and go back to, the way Raw used to be. And I live by the theory that you don't have to have a championship, a universal championship defense every week. The champion doesn't even necessarily have to be there every week. I mean, again, I point back to the old days of the 80s when I was growing up and Hulk Hogan was the champion. And you didn't see, I could count on one hand how many times I probably saw him wrestle on WWF Superstars or Wrestling Challenge. But he made appearances from time to time. My point is the champion doesn't have to always defend. And that way you give fans something to look forward to with these network specials and whatnot. So I've rambled enough. Speaking of champions, Jay Spade, the Stride Pro Wrestling Heavyweight Champion, will be defending against my guest. He is up next. His name is Tony Flood.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey everyone, as promised, my guest this week is the number one contender to the Stride Pro Wrestling Heavyweight Championship, the former two-time legacy champion himself, Tony Flood. Tony, welcome to my 1-2-3 cents, the podcast.
Hey, what's happening, Kevin Huntsberger?
Not a whole lot. And you know what? I hadn't realized it until I went back and kind of looked, and you've been on the show one time, and it was part of a roundtable discussion. I know Farmer was there, and we were talking at Applebee's after a show one night, and I realized my listeners don't know much about Tony Flood other than what I've said before or blogged about. So, Tony, if you don't mind, kind of go back and take, because you have quite a few years under your belt in the ring, even though you are a relatively young man in the business.
Yeah, actually, You know, as you said, I'd only been on, you know, for that roundtable discussion, but, you know, I imagine you saved the best for last, so.
Exactly.
you talked about, you know, my age. I mean, I'm only 27 years old. As far as years in the business, I have 11 solid years as of February 11th.
Wow, awesome.
11 years. I started in 2007 along with my future opponent and current heavyweight champion at Stride Pro Wrestling, Jay Spade. We broke in together. Let's see here. It was, ironically enough, it was in Christopher, Illinois. Jay and I were high school buddies. You know, we were best friends growing up. I met him in sixth grade. It was Mrs. English was our teacher.
I know, a side note, I know Mrs. English's son, Matt. I used to work with him at the TV station. So that's,
oh, well,
that's pretty cool.
Go.
It's full circle.
It was ironically enough in her English class that we met, because we were in sixth grade at the time. And we met in her class. He sat in front of me, and, you know, we had, you know, been discussing and found out that, you know, that I liked wrestling, and he used to like wrestling and hanging out and everything. He kind of got back into it. So, you know, we used to, you know, go to each other's houses and, you know, play with the toy figures and watch Raw. And, you know, we really got into it, but, you know, we started wrestling around together and, you know, kind of figuring things out like, oh, this is how, you know, this looks and blah, blah, blah. And so we found out from his pastor at his church that they were doing a free show in Christopher next to the grocery store Boland's. And it was kind of like an opening of a store that was there. There was a motorcycle shop that had just opened up in town. It was called Rick's Rides. And the proprietor of the motorcycle shop, his name was Rick, obviously, but his daughter went to school with us, and she's the one, you know, that had been hanging up flyers and everything. His pastor tells us, hey, you know, you guys ought to go up there and check it out. He's like, all right. So we got a hold of Brittany and was like, hey, is this going on at, you know, your dad's place? She said, yeah. So we go up, we see the ring getting built. So we're like, oh man, you know, it was the first time, you know, really that we had, you know, seen a show in Christopher at that time. And we was just like, oh man, we've got to go and see this. We got to see this. It's free. We got to go. So, you know, we wait till that afternoon, everybody starts crowding around, we go. And, you know, we show up, there's, you know, probably 200 people there. I mean, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Everybody going to the grocery store, seeing it, you know, they're like, oh wow. So, you know, we show up, and then, you know, his pastor, you know, comes, we're standing there watching it, see some of the matches, and we're just like, oh man, we've got to figure out how we can do this someday. But, you know, that was always our thing, is that we wanted to eventually try to do it. You know, we didn't know anything about, you know, training schools or, you know, how to go about it or what to do. We didn't know any of that. We had nobody showing us nothing. We had no idea. So his pastor goes to the promoter. His name was Will Dixon. And he goes to the promoter. He talks to him. Perry comes back over to us, and he's like, well, he wants to talk to you guys. I'm like, what? Yeah, he wants to talk to you guys. You ought to go over and talk to him, see what he's got to say. We mosey on over there. This is at intermission, mind you. This isn't during the show. This is at intermission. And he's like, so what do you guys know? And we're like, oh, you know, we've been wrestling around. We've been doing this and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, all right, well, show me. We just kind of looked at each other like, what are you talking about? And he's like, show me. He's like, I'll get a referee out here. I'll have you guys do what's called a dark match. And we're like, we hadn't even no idea what even that was. We're like, okay, sure. So we get in there, and, you know, my heart's beating 90-0. I mean, I'm losing my mind at this time. I can imagine Jay felt the same way. So we get in there. Referee comes out. He makes the announcement that two local guys from right here in town are going to do a dark match, blah, 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 blah. We did it. I mean, it was 5 minutes of probably the worst thing you've ever seen in your life. I mean, it was awful. I think there was maybe one thing of footage that I ever seen from it. Somebody, one of our friends recognized this, took a video on a flip phone for crying out loud. And we was just like, oh, this is, we looked at it years later, like, this is awful. We need to delete this, get rid of it, just get it out of here. Well, after it was over, we went and talked to Will, and he's like, well, I'm doing a show February 11th in DuCoin at the Eagles Lodge. And he's like, oh, okay, cool. So we're like, I mean, do you want us to come and watch? And he's like, no. I was like, I want you guys to come. I want to book you. Mm-hmm. And we're like, okay. Like, we had no idea what to even do. So we're like, well, what are we going to do? He's like, well, I'm going to have you guys wrestle each other again. You know, so, I mean, and this happened, I'd say this probably happened in, I don't know, I think it might have been in November of that year, mm-hmm. 2006. So then fast forward, you know, a few months, or quite a few months into February in DuCoin, you know, we're like, oh, man, you know, this is the start. This is it. You know, this is going to be the be-all, end-all of things going on. And we showed up, and nothing went according to plan. I mean, nothing happened the way it was supposed to. Jay and I ended up not wrestling each other. We ended up tagging against Playboy Paul Rose.
Oh, yeah.
And he was technically our first independent match. It was Jay and I against him. And, you know, they pretty much worked it out to where it was going to be, you know, 2-on-1. You're like, oh, okay, well, you know, we had no idea, you know, being fresh into it, what we were going into. But, I mean, John really took care of us. I mean, he was a great, great guy. You know, I mean, he did everything he absolutely could to make us look fantastic. And we did everything we could to return the favor to him, you know. And then after that, we ended up being, you know, traveling with him and wrestling with him all over, you know, the tri-state area. And it was great, you know, for a while. But, you know, that's kind of like the introduction on how things got started. Because after that, then Will invited us to Anna, which is primarily where Heartland Championship Wrestling, which was the name of the company, ran. And it was like that first show they tagged us together. They're like, well, we think you guys got chemistry together. I mean, granted, you know, we've known each other forever, so that's going to happen. But he's like, well, we want to make you guys a tag team. And that was pretty much how it ran for, I don't know, the first year, something like that. And Jay and I had no idea about how to go about forming a tag team, like names, anything like that. We didn't know how to go about it. We didn't even dress the same. Like, it was awful. It literally looked like they plucked us off the street and just threw us together and was like, here you go, guys. You know, have fun. Don't die.
Now, did you ever think that many years ago that the two of you would be headlining a wrestling match, not only a wrestling match, but in your alma mater and wrestling for the championship?
I honestly thought it was going to be something that we did for a very short period of time. I mean, at any moment, we thought that it was going to be over.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly, looking back at it now, I can't believe I've lasted this long. And I mean, there's just no way I thought that it was ever going to be a thing where I would, you know, be with Jay as long as I have, you know, well, as long as I was as a tag team, and mm-hmm. then us still crossing paths throughout the whole thing. I mean, we remained friends forever, you know, even throughout high school and everything. But no, there was no way that I thought that one day he and I would be facing off, you know, to headline an independent company like this. Like, we would headline something, we would be the main attraction of a show. I mean, there's been several times where we've tagged against each other or tagged with each other and done it, but doing it against each other, it's kind of like one of those things. We've always reverted back to whenever we were kids, and it's like Shawn Michaels and Triple H.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just our go-to thing. It's just like, that's kind of how we relate to one another, because, you know, we were best friends coming up through school, you know, even out of school, you know, we were still friends and wrestling. And, but, you know, as far as like headlining something, there was no way. I had no idea that it would even last to the point of getting here. There was just no thought in my mind whatsoever.
That's great. Now, I met Jay through All American Pro Wrestling. I didn't meet you, though, until about 2 years ago with Stride Pro Wrestling. So where were you wrestling? I imagine you stayed in the region, but what companies did you go to then and kind of work at before making your way to Stride?
Well, after HCW, I mean, I continued working for HCW for a while. Jay had kind of left and done his own thing. I'm not real 100% sure what he was doing while I was still there. But I stuck with HCW for a while just because I absolutely loved it. I loved being on the independent scene. I'm pretty sure Jay, we had been offered by another company to go and start wrestling in Metropolis. Mm-hmm. And that was Renegade Pro Wrestling. And the owner of that company was Tojo Yamamoto Jr., who had worked for Will a few times. He was actually at the Christopher show that we originally had seen. And he came and worked for Will, our first show in Anna. And he was like, hey, I'd love to have you guys come down and, you know, do a couple shows for me. I'm going to bring in a TV crew, and we're talking about doing TV tapings that would have aired on Paducah TV, but not Illinois TV.
Uh-huh.
So that was kind of a bummer because we didn't get the channel. So I kind of had to rely on the guys that did live in Paducah. Like, hey, can you get me a tape of this? I'd really like to see it, you know? And even if he had like a 7-match card, maybe 3 of those matches actually made it on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was fortunate enough to have, I think I total, by the time that I had left there, I think I maybe had 3 matches, but he only had the TV slot for, I think it was 6 months.
Oh, gotcha.
But, yeah, Jay had only come to RPW for, I think he was there for a string of maybe 5 or 6 shows, something like that. And we had tagged up there for a while. We had been into a feud with another tag team down there. We feuded over the tag titles. We split up. I went off on my own. Jay went off on his own. After RPW, see, I continued working for HCW and RPW at the same time, kind of simultaneously. But RPW was the only one that was consistent. They ran every Friday night, and then it switched to every Friday and Saturday night.
Mm.
So by this time, me and Jay would have been juniors. So I decided to stop going to football practice and in place of going to wrestling shows because the games would have been on Friday nights. Whenever you're a senior, you know, football,
yeah,
it falls on Friday nights. So in place, I started going there and Jay had too, and until, you know, we split up and then it was, you know, Jay went and did whatever Jay did.
Now, because you guys were still in high school, did your parents have to sign off on you doing this? And what did they think?
Well, you know, see, that's the beautiful thing about independent wrestling. Not everybody, I don't want to say cares, mm-hmm. but I guess has that give a crap factor, you know, because uh-huh. whenever we started, you know, we were, this year would have been 2006. I would have just turned 17. Jay would have been 17. So, I mean, I know I remember signing a waiver for Will. I don't know if Jay did or not, but I remember signing a waiver for Will, and I remember signing a waiver for RPW, but I mean, it could have been something as simple as them going home to their computer and typing something out.
Sure.
Like, I really don't, I highly, highly doubt that they actually carried insurance. I mean, I'm not going to say that for sure.
Right, right.
But, you know, I mean, that's just kind of the risk it is. I mean, some of these companies aren't exactly on the standard that Stride is, or some of the other companies that I've worked for in the past that actually carry insurance, that actually care whether somebody gets hurt or not and whether you're covered on the back end.
So I always ask independent guys, what is it about this? Because I know in some cases you're loading up in a car with a bunch of guys traveling, sometimes hundreds of miles, getting paid very little, and you turn around and you do it again, and you're putting your bodies on the line, and, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears. Why did you do it? What was it about pro wrestling that hooked you so many years ago to continue and pursue on to this?
Well, I mean, to answer your question about my parents, what my parents thought, I mean, they were kind of the reason that I did do it. I mean, my family is kind of the reason that I did do it. My mom and dad absolutely were 100% supportive, and my mom still is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my dad passed last year, but, I mean, he absolutely loved that I did it. He thought it was the greatest thing ever because it tickled him to death if somebody talked to him about me and mentioned wrestling. I mean, he thought it was the greatest thing ever. It was like he thought that his son was, you know, this big star and everything like that. I said, Dad, it's not like that, even close. I said, I'm technically a nothing. I'm a nobody. Not everybody goes, oh, no, no, no. There's too many people that come up to me and talk to me about you wrestling that, you know, you're a star. And I'm like, yeah, whatever, Dad. But my mom, you know, she's still like that. She still supports me. I mean, she's still, you know, it still makes her nervous. And,
yeah.
You know, it still bothers her. Obviously, I know she's talked to you about it before.
Yes, yes. We have talked in the I've sat down and next to her. And yes, there are times that I can tell, you know, and as a parent, that's what you do.
Yes, well, she makes it very known, you know, don't mess with my son or I'll kick your butt myself. Yeah, that's just how she is, you know, she's something. But, you know, they've always supported me. And what actually got me into wrestling whenever I was a kid was my brother-in-law was watching Monday Night Raw at my parents' house whenever they came to visit once. I mean, I was probably seven, something like that. And I remember one of my first early memories of wrestling was seeing the Raw intro. Okay, you know, remember the old Raw intro? You know, it was like the red and blue and the flashing lights and the silhouettes of wrestlers. And I can distinctly remember one of the first things that ever caught my eye was Yokozuna whenever he was going to give the Banzai drop the rope snap.
Yeah.
And I seen the guy get crushed, and I was like, oh, my God, oh, man. And Tommy, that's my brother-in-law, he was just like, yeah. He's like, yeah, it's a big guy to be coming down on you. And I'm like, I was drawn to it. Like, oh, my God, there's these humongous guys just smacking and punching and kicking and slamming the crap out of each other. So because of my brother-in-law, I got into it. He introduced me to it, basically. And my dad, I can remember coming into the living room, and he's like, what are you guys watching? I was like, oh, Raw. And he's like, oh, you know, back in my day, you know, Dick the Bruiser and his cousin the Crusher were the be-all, end-all, blah, 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 you know, just going off about how in his day it was this, and today it's a bunch of, you know, mamby-pamby, you know, a bunch of guys dressing up in pink suits and, you know, playing dress-up and all this, but back in his day it was legitimate. It was like boxing. It was real. It was this and that, you know. So I watched it kind of in spite of him, because I would be like, oh, Dad, see this? Oh, no, Andre the Giant would crush him with his pinky, you know. So I was like, oh, okay, you know, show me some of that wrestling then. So I can remember going to, I think it was Pooh's Video in Christopher, mind you. It was the video store there, and they had WrestleMania 1 and 2. I mean, they used to have this big wrestling section. Now, granted, this was on VHS tapes. This was not DVDs.
Yes.
Okay, so WrestleMania, I can distinctly remember him grabbing WrestleMania 3. And it was Hulk Hogan and Andre.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the headline, you know, and then Steamboat and Savage, which I didn't appreciate until later in life, whenever I'd actually started wrestling, and I realized, you know, that that was really the match on the card. But I found out, you know, that Andre and Hogan were the marquee. They were the guys. They were the reason you came and watched this show.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what made it a big deal. Andre was, you know, my dad's third favorite wrestler. So he's like, I'm going to show you who Andre is and what he is. So then immediately I fell in love with, you know, classic wrestling on top of what I was already watching in the 90s. I was like, oh, man, I didn't even know about these guys, you know, because Hulk Hogan I knew from WCW and being the bad guy. And, you know, he's like, well, you ought to have seen him back in the 80s.
I'm
like, what are you talking about? So then he shows me the 80s Hulk Hogan, and I'm like, oh, my God, what happened?
That's awesome.
You know, and that's whenever I found out about storylines and when I found out about this and that. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's just blowing my mind. And I didn't know what to do with myself. I'm like, how could Hulk Hogan turn his back on the people that supported him? You know, I really got into it because of my family. They're the ones to, I guess, thank for you know, me being so enamored with it and wanting to see it and do it.
That's awesome. Now, your style, you, not only in the ring but on the mic, reminds me very old school of that 80s wrestler. Where did you draw, or who do you draw inspiration from when it comes to being Tony Flood?
Well, I mean, I've never really had a problem with talking. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've never really been one to, if you get me talking about something, I'll talk all day. I just don't shut up. It's a blessing and a curse. sometimes it gets me in trouble. You know, in particular, whenever, you know, I'm performing, I'm at a show, obviously my mouth gets me in trouble, but I mean, I always excelled, you know, at talking. I mean, speech class was aces for me. It was great. But as far as inspiration, I mean, I pay a lot of attention to, realism. You know, you want to take something. I always kind of think of it as, you know, you're writing a book, you know, and if you can use things from your personal life and use it in like shooting a promo or doing a video or, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, if you can draw inspiration from within and use a situation from your life, then it seems more real, and it makes the audience connect more with what you're saying and what you're doing. The guys that I watch a lot, whenever they cut their promos, like, you know, whenever, you know, whenever I'm at Stride, basically.
Right.
Like whenever I am the bad guy, I am the be all end all of hated people on this planet. Guys that I like to take, I watch their promos and I take things away from. Like whenever Jerry the King Lawler was whenever he was a big heel, whenever he was the guy that everybody wanted to just murder. I love Jerry the King Lawler. Big fan of his promos. As far as like the newer era in like 2005-ish, somewhere in there, to 2009, like Mr. Kennedy, I loved his energy. I loved the way he carried himself, the way he delivered his promos was just absolutely fantastic. I thought they were great. Just because he was different, you know, Jerry, yeah. He always drew from the people, and he would use like high school teams or college teams or what was going on in the town to draw attention to what he was saying. You know, for example, he'd, you know, be like, oh, you know, if he's in Chicago, like, oh yeah, you know, this Sunday I'm gonna blah 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 to this guy, you know, I won't choke like the Bears.
Yeah.
And then instantly everybody's just like, oh, you dirtbag, you piece of crap. You know, one promo that really stood out in my mind with Jerry was whenever he went to ECW and they invaded.
Yeah.
And, you know, he obviously didn't use family-friendly language like we do at Stride or some of the other promotions. What, I mean, he absolutely went all out because of his setting, and he was able to do that. But what he said was straight to the point, and it got done what he wanted, and he drew everybody in with what he was saying. So whenever you can literally have a microphone in your hand and draw every eye in the room on you and have them literally focusing on what you're saying, not just the fact that you're talking, but if they can connect and react to what you're saying, then, I mean, you've literally got them in the palm of your hands, and you can mold them like Play-Doh and do what you want with them. I mean, that's the beautiful part, and I think a lost art in independent professional wrestling in particular is that not everybody focuses on their promos. Not everybody really tries to harness emotion and everything into a promo, because you can do a lot with a promo. Like I learned a lot watching Jake the Snake Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably, I don't know, one of the best, I mean, guys that could deliver on the microphone ever, if not the best ever, because he literally just had to look at you and you were instantly sucked into him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just with the camera sitting on him, he just drew you in, and whenever he spoke, you hung on every word that he had to say. And it wasn't just what he was saying, it was how he said it. It was his face, it was the tone of his voice, it was the material that he was talking about, it was the person he was talking about, what he was going to do, what he wasn't going to do. It just absolutely drew you in. And so I try to do the same thing. I mean, I try to do it a little more laid back. You know, I don't literally try to, you know, get right in their face. But I try to do everything that I can personally to not only draw attention to me, but to the event and the person that I am going to be wrestling against, because it's not just about me. You know, if they cared just about me, then it would be Tony Flood's pro wrestling. It wouldn't be Stride pro wrestling. You know, it mm-hmm. you want to draw as much attention to the match and to what you're trying to do, you know, as a whole, and not single yourself out. You want them to be just as focused on your opponent as possible as they are on you.
And you have had some really great matches in Stride over the last 2 years that I've been watching you. Chris Hargis, Heath Hatton, and Jerry Travelstead all come to mind. And I think, you know, Jerry, we know, kind of comes from an education background. He's not been wrestling very long, but I really think you have helped kind of create and mold him into a much better in-ring performer. How do you take that role on? Because, you know, you mentioned you are a young man still, but you have 11 years of experience. So you are kind of in that role, I think, at least, that you're shaping the young men and women who are coming up in the business today.
Well, I mean, I try to do as much as I can for everybody else, because very few people did that for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like whenever Jay and I were coming up, we started training together and everything, but we didn't actually learn much of anything whenever we were starting. I mean, we were still, we didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know where we were going. We didn't know anything about character development, about psychology, about ring awareness. And those are all key factors of being a professional wrestler. I mean, I give credit to the two first guys that taught us how to bump, Mike Slade and Steve Miller. They both helped us out with the falls, with, you know, taking bumps and everything like that, and learning how to run the ropes and chain wrestling. They taught us those things, but they didn't teach us anything about, you know, character development, mic skills, ring psychology, ring awareness. Those things, those are far more important, in my opinion, than bumping. I mean, anybody could teach you how to do that, just about, if they know what they're doing anyway.
Yeah.
But we didn't learn about those things. I know Jay had went to IWA Productions, and he learned from Josh Totten and Homicidal Stephen Davis. Those are the guys that taught him what he knew, and he got a hold of him. He's like, man, you need to come up here and check these guys out. So I give them full credit for teaching me about ring awareness, about psychology, about, you know, character development, because that's the reason people come and see. They can watch two guys that don't have any of those things fall around and bounce off the ropes and crash and all that stuff. But, you know, as far as me, I try to do everything that I can for the person that wants to learn. I mean, you can usually tell from somebody that actually cares that they want to do it. So if you can really see that they have the drive to do it, then you absolutely put everything you can into it. I mean, wrestling school ain't cheap.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you have to really be dedicated. Jerry, being one of those guys, was absolutely 100% dedicated. I met Jerry in Carrier Mills. We were doing a show there, and Jerry was talking to Heath Hatton. And, you know, I went up, I shook his hand. I didn't really know him. You know, he's like, hey, this is Jerry. I'm like, oh, hey, Jerry, you know, regular introductions. I didn't know anything about him. I didn't see anything special about him. He was just a guy,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then later that night, it was, I think it was him and Heath had tagged up. And I'm like, wow, this guy's new. But, I mean, he's got pretty good build for being an older guy. I mean, you know, he has a little gray in his hair. He's got the Silver Fox thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, you know, I mean, this guy's really giving it his all for his age, and he's in great shape, but it's like he hadn't been worked with a lot. Like, I could tell that he'd been worked with, and Heath had told me, yeah, man, I mean, I've worked with him, you know, I've been helping, you know, train with him and everything. I'm like, oh, that's great. And then I meet him again later whenever Stride starts getting going, and, you know, I find out, you know, that he had been training, but it wasn't a lot. So then I find out later on that he wanted to learn, that he wanted to do these things. And I'm like, oh, well, that's great. So start going to the school. I see Jerry there. I start working with Jerry. Heath's working with Jerry. Jerry was literally like a sponge. I mean, he soaked up absolutely everything that he could from anybody. You know, he took what I had said, and I've said it to every single person that has ever wanted to do this, is that you can learn anything from anybody, even if it's what not to do. And Jerry took that and ran with it. I mean, absolutely ran with it. He did everything he could to ask everybody around him, what'd you think of my match? You know, did you watch it? What'd you think? What do I need to work on? What was the positive? What was the negative? I mean, he ran with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's absolutely become, you know, fantastic compared to what he was 2 years ago.
Absolutely. So, and
I definitely try to, you know, take the knowledge that I've gained over the years and pass it forward the best that I can. And I, one thing that I have been told, whenever I'm doing training, or whether I'm helping, or whether I'm the actual trainer, I've been in both roles, that patience, you know, oh, you have more patience than anybody I know. I mean, realistically, if you know me as a person, I don't have that lot of patience, but whenever it comes to training, I try to have as much patience mm-hmm. as possible, because again, nobody did that with me until I was probably 2 or 3 years into it. And then I really started learning because people had the actual patience to sit down with me and say, look, this is what we need to work on. This you're doing really good at. This you're doing terrible at. We need to fix this. So I try to do the exact same thing with everybody else that I have. I mean, I don't really try to take credit for training anybody or even having a hand in training anybody. If that person feels necessary to say, hey, you know, Tony taught me this, or, you know, hey, this guy taught me that, or whatever. If they can look back and just say to me, you helped me whenever nobody else would, or you helped me with this, I'm happy. I don't ask for credit. I don't want credit. But if they actually come to me and say, you helped me and with this, and you did that, you were good to me, blah, 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 that's all I can really ask for as a thank you. I don't really try to be a hound about it and be like, oh, you have me to thank for that. And, you know, I did this for you. I'm just not that kind of person. You know, I enjoy it. And whenever, you know, Jerry had put out there, whenever we were doing Stride Bios, I can distinctly remember this because I messaged him myself and I'm like, I really appreciate this. He credited Keith and me for his training. And I just thought that was the greatest thing ever. I mean, that I put up there was some, you know, some serious accomplishments, because I'm like, you know, that was actually super nice of him. And, you know, probably the nicest thing he could have ever done for me is to just even say that I had a hand in it whatsoever. That mm-hmm. was just great.
Well, yeah, you are, you know, again, this is, you know, this whole podcast, this whole blog, My 1-2-3 Cents, is about my opinion. So you are, in my opinion, one of the best in here, in not only in Southern Illinois and Stride Pro Wrestling, but on the independent scene. Obviously, a huge opportunity coming up as you face Jay Spade. You talked about the history. Do you put that to the side as you prepare for this? Because I would imagine that shot, that one, potentially one shot at that championship belt, you know, everything else kind of goes out the window, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's taken me 2 years. Actually 3 years now. I mean, the anniversary of Stride is March 5th. If you can remember back, the very first Stride show, it was X Allwork versus Heath Hatton versus Frank Wyatt versus Tony Flood.
Mm-hmm.
We were the main event. We were the fatal four-way for the heavyweight championship. And if you can recollect yourself, because I know I'm not going to forget it, is that in 3 years, I haven't had a shot at the heavyweight title, not once. Ever since that, it was like I lost my opportunity, and I just went to the bottom of the pile, and it seems like over the last 3 years, I've slowly but surely built my way up. I mean, I had a good, lack for a better word, a good stride going for me with getting and obtaining the legacy belt, you know, by hook or by crook. I know some people, you know, will say, oh, you had underhanded tactics, you didn't do it the right way. Well, in this business, there is no right way. There's the right way and there's the wrong way. But see, there's my way. And that's the only way I care about, is my way. Whatever my way is what's obtaining me glory. And that's really all that you can hope to obtain in this business, is that at the end of the day, somebody is going to remember your name. And by March 3rd, my goal is to completely and ultimately solidify my name as being a Stride heavyweight champion. Whether I lose, whether I win, I know I'm going to be satisfied with the match. I mean, it's kind of, I don't know if you want to call it destiny. I don't want to know if you want to call it fate or just plain old luck. It don't really matter to me, but this match means an absolute lot to me because, not just because of the championship, obviously that's my ultimate goal, but ironically enough, it's against Jay Spade, who I've known forever. It's in the hometown that we both grew up in, and it's at a school that we both attended. So I can't really put into words how much this match means to me. Not only is it for a good cause, but it also is finally culminating ahead between me and Jay. It's been years since we faced off, and I know absolutely 100% by the time it's over, I am going to finally become what I've been destined to be, and that is Stride Pro Wrestling's heavyweight champion.
Well, you know, like I said, it is a much deserved opportunity. You have been one of the most consistent and most improved performers on the Stride roster, former two-time legacy champion. I wish you nothing but luck. Jay Spade is we've talked about his heart and his spirit before as well. It's going to be a great match. I predict this match will steal the show. It is the main event. It is for a great cause as well. We will be at Christopher Grade School on Saturday, March 3rd. It's this coming Saturday. Bell time is 7 o'clock. Is it 6:30 or 7? I don't have the card in front of me, and I wish I did now.
I'm actually positive that the doors open at 6:30, and I'm pretty sure the show starts at 7. Okay. I actually don't have a flyer in front of me right now. I'm going off of memory.
Yeah, and the write-up will be here as well. Tony, as we wrap things up, anything else you want to say as we prepare for what I would say is probably your biggest match as far as that shot at the ultimate glory in Stride Pro Wrestling?
I mean, yeah, basically, it's pretty much the be-all, end-all. This is going to be the biggest match up to date. I've had a lot of great matches over the years. I've had a lot of great opponents. Many actually have said that Jay is probably my greatest opponent because of the history that we do have. I look forward to it very, very much. I implore everybody that does listen to this, that takes the time to listen to this, I thank you, and I really, really implore you to come and see this show because it is going to be my finest hour, and I'm sure Jay's finest hour.
Very well said. Very well said. Again, it is happening this Saturday night, 7 p.m. is your bell time. Doors open at 6:30. Again, check out Stride Pro Wrestling on Facebook. Tony Flood, thank you so much for your time and all you do for the professional wrestling business.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it, sir.
Absolutely. And fans, be sure again to join us, and we'll be back next week with another episode of My 1-2-3 Cents.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.